I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Sinister Sightings 342.
Before we start, I found a sinister sightings that was hiding in the emails, and it said Bellamy Bridge on it. And I was like, wait, I've covered that. That's probably why I know it. And I'm so sorry. I just want to give a shout out to Katie N for this recommendation that I did like a few weeks back. And she had one little like tidbit about it. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's in Mariana, Florida. And that's like Panhandle. She said like everyone knows everyone. And there's rumored to be a bridge that's haunted by the Bride of Bellamy. And she said that her dad has a story from there. He was fishing with his dog out there, and the dog refused to leave the truck, and he kind of just froze. And her dad stated that he could feel the Bride of Bellamy's presence there. And the dog just sat in the truck and growled at the bridge.
No, thank you.
And so I just wanted to give Katie that shout out because thank you for the recommendation. I don't know if that was just like a subconscious thing that I saw in here. But then I was like, oh, also she has like a little tie-in.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to do that at the beginning of this sinister sighting. So now onto the regular scheduled program.
Well, that's funny because I think it was yesterday I was looking in the story recommendations because we, you know, in our email, we have folders. And so as emails come in, like new sinister sightings, we put it in a folder. Story recommendations, we put it in a folder just to kind of organize the email. And I was in the story recommendations folder and perusing, and I found a sinister sightings from like 1942 we hadn't read. So I slid that over too. So if you've sent in the sinister sightings we haven't read, that's probably why. Email's hard. Okay, let's go on to the first one. Paranormal, my last ghost story so far. September 8th, 2025. Dear ladies, it's Disco Lady from Texas, who now lives in Washington. Why did I say that so creepy?
I think you lost your Washington.
Well, they put the wash. What did I say? They did wash. Washington.
That makes more sense.
What did I just do? Okay. Well, okay.
Washington.
Okay. This is my last one so far, so I'm counting on the rest of you for more deliciously spooky stories. In 2002, my then husband and I drove across the country from Texas to Massachusetts so he could go back to school for his PhD. He had managed to get into a very prestigious school, so we quit our jobs, packed up our stuff in a U-Haul, and moved over the summer. I would like to mention that driving cross-country with two cats sounded so much easier in theory than it was in reality. The trip should have taken 4 to 5 days, but our saga lasted over a week. We had to tear apart and put back together every hotel room we stayed in during the drive because our little Houdinis figured out hiding places in each one that made it incredibly difficult to get them out of the room the next morning. While we slept, they crawled underneath the bed and found an opening between the mattresses and the floor inside the guards under the bed. The guards that keep you from storing stuff under the bed and forgetting about it, the ones that you can only get to if you take the bed fully apart, or they would find crawl spaces between the rooms. One that we didn't know was there until we realized that there was a small opening in the cabinet under the bathroom sink. Every day was a fun adventure. After driving no more than 45 to 55 miles per hour and slower uphill for many hours each day, we dragged ourselves exhausted into our hotel rooms, fed the cats, and set up their litter box, and fell asleep, only to be woken repeatedly between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. by one of the cats wailing at the top of their lungs. We slept fitfully after that and awoke a few hours later to find the cats had foiled us again, forcing us to take the entire room apart to find their hiding place, followed by putting the room back together, eating breakfast, and starting our journey again. 3 days of this had us visiting a veterinarian in Tennessee for calming meds, which worked pretty well. The same kitty still wailed, but now it sounded like a record getting slower and slower. It was hellish. We were so tired. We were able to stay with a friend for a couple of days and rest up, but back on the road, our days returned to the same terrible pattern. Once we made it to Pennsylvania, we were able to stay with my ex's grandmother, whom I had never met, in the home that she had shared with his grandfather, who died before my ex was born. We're going to call my ex Mark from here on forward. Mark's grandmother wasn't very mobile, so she was living downstairs in a two-story home, unwilling at that point to move into a more comfortable place. When we went upstairs, we discovered that the room we were going to stay in had very little furniture in it, but that was okay because we wouldn't have to dig our cats out of any false bottom bed or any other furniture. The room had a double bed at a weird angle, so it faced one of the corners of the room, and there was a dresser, and that's it. The closet door remained closed, thank goodness, and the door to the room closed, preventing our cats from escaping into the rest of the house. It was a hot night and all but one of the windows were nailed shut. We placed a box fan in the window that opened and got ready for an uncomfortable night. As we climbed into bed, we immediately rolled into the center. The sides of the mattress rose up on either side, trapping us into a sweaty puddle in the middle. There was no way to escape contact and no way to sleep on my stomach. So I maneuvered onto my back and threw one leg and one arm over the side to catch any breath of air. It was July. It was too hot for covers, so we just had a thin sheet, which we tried to use to separate us in the bed that swallowed us up. It took forever to get to sleep, and I was exhausted. So imagine my surprise when I woke up suddenly. I remember opening my eyes in the dark, but I could clearly see a figure in the corner of the room. A man was in our room. I tried to wake Mark, but he wouldn't rouse. I looked at the man as he stood in the corner of the room, and although I couldn't see the colors, I could see that he was wearing a rain poncho and a fisherman's rain hat. He was tall and had a thin face with prominent cheekbones, a strong chin, and a thin line for a mouth. He looked grim, but I didn't get the feeling that he was angry. He was just standing there, looking. I tried to wake Mark again, but he wouldn't wake up. And when I looked back, the figure was gone. Eventually, I was able to get back to sleep again. You could be sure I had no plans to get out of that bed again until it was light outside, so thankfully, I slept. In the morning, I told Mark what happened and that I was certain the man I saw had to be his grandfather. Mark had no idea what his grandfather looked like. He wasn't close to his grandmother and couldn't recall ever seeing photographs. I swore him to secrecy, and we made a plan that I would innocently ask to see photos of his grandfather to confirm our suspicions. We went downstairs, and she pulled out a few photo books, and wouldn't you know it, he was tall and had a gaunt face with prominent cheekbones. His mouth was a thin line, and he looked kind of grim in the photos. I didn't see any photos with a poncho and a fisherman's rain hat, so I have no idea why Mark's grandfather appeared like that to me. And I felt uneasy asking probing questions. So much remains unanswered. I would like to think that Mark's grandfather was still looking after his grandmother in that house, and perhaps that's why she didn't want to leave. I think he wanted to get a look at his grandson, so he appeared in the room. I was so tired and out of sorts that I couldn't keep my ghost guard up, so I saw him. Or maybe he wanted me to see him. We didn't mention anything to his grandmother, as it might have upset her. Our visit was only one night, thank goodness. I don't know how I would have handled knowing a ghost was there and getting even less sleep. The next stop on our journey would be Mark's parents' house in New Hampshire, where we would stay until we could move into our apartment close to campus. Of course, I swore Mark to secrecy. I didn't want him to tell his parents when we got to their house, as I'd only met them twice before and freaked them out about their new daughter-in-law. So, of course, the first thing he did was say, "Hey, guess what? My wife saw my grandpa's ghost at grandma's house." Idiot. Thanks to my beautiful, sweary ghost ladies for providing a platform for sharing stories and for reading mine on the show. I'm honored, and if I encounter any more weird stuff, I'll write in. If you're keeping track, today's Monday, September 8th, 2025. Thanks for letting me stay anonymous. Creep it real, and you know the rest. Much love, Disco Lady from Washington. I got it that time.
Can you tell me why his grandfather looked like Ichabod Crane?
I was thinking why he looked like Gordon, the fisherman from the fish box.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah. Or from I Know You, What You Did Last Summer.
Yes.
But like the thin, gaunt, all of that. I was like, Ichabod Crane?
Oh, yes. Well, also, was he going to Harvard?
Ooh. You know, Elle Woods went there.
A prominent university in Massachusetts. It had to have been, right?
Like, it's hard to get in there.
What? Like, it's hard? I'm just nosy, so I want to know.
Well, that, yeah. Also, I will say I would be your ex.
Yes, God, yes.
That would be the first thing I would say.
Me, Donna, don't say anything. Also, Donna. So guess what happened? And I'm like, God damn it, Donna.
Oops.
Also, that sounds fucking terrible. But I bet that trip was beautiful because I drove from Mississippi to Massachusetts and it was fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, but not with the two cats that were Houdinis.
No, I was by myself.
No, I know.
And I did it in two. There was a one night stop. I did it in 2 days.
Oh, Lord.
Honestly, I was so tired. It was a little bit of a blur. I really don't remember at all. I'm like, I keep trying to remember, where did I stop? And I don't even remember. Like, I remember being like, well, because one, I'm stupid. So I would be like I went through New York and then I can't remember how I went through the states. And I remember thinking, that's not the order I would think that I would go through those states in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Being like, wow, I really don't know geography. Like, I'm really not smart.
Yes, you are.
But not like that.
Geography's not my strong suit either. Okay, the next one. Hi, ladies. I've been putting off sending this email for far too long, but a recent event has put things in motion. Before that, though, I need to say that y'all bring me a sense of comfort and joy. I have severe anxiety and depression, and when either has me stuck in bed, I have to put y'all's podcast on. It's weird, but it feels like the two of you are in the same room with me. There are also times I'm cleaning and I realize it's quiet and I start to panic until I'm able to put on an episode. Maybe it's a dependency. Either way, thank you for being there without being there. I love y'all. Now, onto the story. I will be changing names because it involves DV rape and child neglect and abuse. Last year, my husband and I allowed my in-laws, Ray and Liz, to move in with us for a few months while they searched for a new home. Last minute, we were told that they were bringing their 3-year-old granddaughter, Jess, with them. Jess is nonverbal with severe autism and has a mom and dad, Whitney and Bobby, who prioritize drugs and alcohol over her. Well, Whitney doesn't, but she supports Bobby, and what he says goes. Ray and Liz were also letting them move back in because they were constantly getting evicted. We didn't have any issues with them bringing the little one. A few days before they started their drive, we had a message. We have to bring Whitney and Bobby, or else we can't bring Jess, and we fear that she will not survive with them. So, of course, we hesitantly allowed it. My husband is military and he got deployed just before their arrival. So it was only myself and my two kids that were here to deal with things. When the whole Brady Bunch got here, it took some getting used to. To go from a house with 3 to 4 to a house with 8, there was a new feeling in my home and that feeling slowly got worse and worse. Ray and Liz both hated Whitney with a passion and blamed her for everything that could go wrong. Meanwhile, Bobby could do no wrong. Bobby was Liz's 26-year-old baby boy. Whitney and Bobby both got jobs working at night, and Liz stayed home to watch Jess. In the meantime, Ray was looking for work too. I was helping him look, and I had just quit my job so I could be home for the summer to take care of my two. I tried to involve Jess in everything my girls did, but when her parents were around, they wouldn't let her. They would always claim they didn't want her autism to annoy us. I constantly told them I'm not bothered by it one bit and she would benefit from socializing, but they still resisted. On their days off, they would stay locked in the room with her and we wouldn't see any of them, only hear them throughout the night when they were downstairs to cook. In the mornings, Ray would come downstairs when I would make coffee, and he would immediately start talking shit about Whitney and only her, even though Bobby was messier, a drunk, and lazy. I would always defend her and tell him to please stop being so negative because it made my home feel heavy, and he would also never tell her to her face. He would expect me or Bobby to tell her. It got to a point that I would run downstairs to make my coffee and I would run back up to my room to avoid Ray. At first, I thought it was abnormal that they would keep Jess on a night schedule, and I even told them it might do more harm to her than good, but they didn't want her running around keeping them awake when they had to work, so I was like, okay, not my child, maybe I'm overthinking things. I would ask them if they needed me to buy her vitamins or supplements, because she was just so tiny, so thin with a sunken-in face, but they would tell me no. As time went on, I realized she wasn't eating well, and it didn't bother Bobby or Whitney. There was a day I sat and pondered calling CPS because it just didn't feel right, but I really didn't know what to report. Well, one night I woke up at 2 a.m. to Jess screaming bloody murder. Her mom was cooking, and Jess had gotten on a chair and placed her entire hand flat on the burner. I had gotten downstairs and got the first aid kit out and was doing all I could to help her. It took Bobby about 10 minutes to stumble downstairs drunk. Of course, we were all freaking out because her entire hand was one giant blister. I offered to take her to the ER and they told me no. They said they would take her. Almost an hour later, they were still getting ready while Jess screamed and cried at the top of her lungs, and I couldn't take it anymore. I stormed into the room where they were sitting on the floor rocking Jess. I told them, "You go now, or I will have the cops here to take her." They jumped up and they took her. I was pissed. It angers me to think about it to this day. While they were gone, I went into the room and found the closet full of empty liquor and beer bottles, empty THC cartridges that they had brought with them, and bottles of opioids belonging to Bobby's grandmother. After that night, I called a friend who works for CPS, and I asked her if I could report the malnutrition, them keeping her in the room, the hand burn, and the weird sleep schedule. She said I could start a file, but nothing would really happen because the most significant thing was the burn, and that was an accident. In the meantime, I supported them any way I could so they could get off their feet and move out, and I helped my in-laws search for a house. I had to leave for a few days, and when I came back, the feeling of dread slapped me in the face when I opened the front door. I was not happy to be back. I walked in to see that Whitney had a black eye. I looked at her and asked what the fuck happened, and she said Bobby had thrown something and it bounced and hit her by accident. I stayed staring at her and she looked away, so I asked again and she said Bobby was pissed off because she took the last hit of a vape and she left him with none, so he threw it at her face. I went and told him I would be calling the police if I saw anything more. Ray was still being a negative Nancy, and now him and Liz were fighting about anything and everything. During these months, I had been having reoccurring nightmares of a dark figure slowly walking up the stairs and standing by my door. And other times I was inside the dark figure at the door looking at myself sleeping. There were many nights I would hear footsteps slowly walking up the stairs and I would sit up in bed and see my doorknob moving and then I would wake up. It was just a dream. I would always wake up in a sweat, but there were also nights I would hear footsteps and it wasn't a dream. So I would tiptoe to my door and try to catch someone creeping around, but no one was there. It occurred more and more as time went on. My in-laws finally found a house and they started moving out. I told Whitney and Bobby that they should stay for a little while so they didn't have to move in and deal with the negativity of Liz and Ray, and maybe it would help their relationship out. And I offered to assist them with rides so they could work full-time and possibly get more than one job. One day, I took my kids to a birthday party and I got a call that Bobby had beat Whitney in the house and he took off driving drunk. So we rushed home. I called him and told him I would allow him to come grab some of his shit, but he was no longer allowed in my house after what he did. I told Whitney she could stay with me as long as she needed. My in-laws had taken Jess with them, so she was in good hands. Well, Bobby moved in with Mommy Dearest, and after a few weeks, Whitney decided to move out also. I wasn't happy about it, but I was happy to have my home back. The feeling of dread was gone once Bobby had been kicked out, and I stopped hearing footsteps and having weird dreams for a little while. About 1 month after they had been gone, Bobby had put Whitney in the hospital and CPS was finally involved. Unfortunately, Mommy Dearest defended Bobby because she thought he would give her custody. I had to contact the caseworker and give all the info I could because I knew they were keeping facts to themselves. Well, nothing ever happened there. Bobby and Whitney to this day still have custody and they use her to extort money from Liz and Ray. Bobby put Whitney in the hospital 2 more times and he was in and out of jail 4 times, bailed out by Mommy each time. The last arrest occurred because Bobby had beat and raped Whitney while she was 5 months pregnant and he questioned about how much she really wanted to have that baby. I offered to fly her out of state, back to her family, and away from all this toxicity, but his claws were in her so deep that she said thanks, but no thanks, and went back for a few weeks. My anxiety was through the roof. I was waiting for the call that she would be dead or the baby was killed. It consumed me. My therapist told me I had done all I could do and told me people can't get help until they want to be helped. She told me I can be a listening ear, but situations like this require both the victim and the abuser to get their own professional help. My medication doses went up and I was prescribed nightmare medication. As of now, Bobby's in rehab and Whitney left the state after having a healthy baby boy. Jess was left behind with Grandma. A few days ago, they came to visit us and Jess is just so happy and glowing, and she's at a healthy weight, and I was able to breathe. I had cut ties with my in-laws a couple of months ago because of them bailing out that rapist piece of shit, but I needed to see my niece. That's the only reason I've started to see them again. I asked Liz what facility her son's at and how long he'll be there and if she knows what the next steps are. She looked at Ray and said she hasn't talked to him or heard from him, but she later slipped and mentioned him telling her something yesterday. She looked at me and I looked at her, and for the rest of the night, she stayed away from me. That night, after they left, I put my girls to bed and I was getting out of the shower. I heard footsteps coming up the stairs. I stood there listening and I grabbed my gun from my closet. I called out to see if it was one of my girls, but no answer. The footsteps were too loud to be them anyways. I asked if it was Liz or Ray, and then I asked, "Are you someone or something that Ray and Liz brought with them?" The footsteps stopped. I shined my bright-ass LED light to the stairs, thinking whoever it was now standing still at the top of the stairs, but there was no one there. So I ran to check on my girls. I said, "Whoever you are not welcome in this home. You are not invited by me, and you need to leave." Since being in this house, I've only heard things when my in-laws were around. Well, this is where the story ends for now. What do y'all think? Are my in-laws so toxic, all of them, that they have a presence following them around and it sometimes gets left behind? I also want to say, if you or anyone you know are in a relationship with any amount of violence, please leave. It will get worse. Sometimes slowly, sometimes suddenly. Get out before it's too late. If you ever question the relationship, that means it's time to end it. Please do not defend the abuser by blaming yourself. Even if you are unsure or you think you're overreacting, get advice from professionals. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is a place to start. Their number is 800-799-7233. Or text BEGIN to 88788. Please stay safe and stay alive. And remember, creep it real and don't get scared.
I literally just saw a TikTok yesterday about this girl that was talking about how she was in this abusive relationship and she had just gotten out. And she had called that hotline and they asked, I think, like 13 questions. And she had answered yes to 12 of them. And like she had no idea that she was in that abusive of a relationship until those questions were posed to her. And then she was like, oh, my God, this is so much worse than I even realized. Because when you're in the thick of it, you can't see the forest for the trees, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And Hell, we just did like a worst of the worst for Patreon. And we kind of talk about this too. Like, you get in that cycle and that like Stockholm syndrome.
But I feel like with any relationship too, if you're questioning it, like, I just feel like when you know, you know. And so, I don't know, even abusive. Like, if you are questioning your safety with someone, it's bad.
Right. That was such a heavy story. But, you know, I think a lot of negativity in a place like that, like the toxicity, like you were talking about, it does create a negative energy in the house. And that can cause you to have, you know, sleep paralysis. It can cause you to have the nightmares. Hell, you were worried so much, had so much anxiety. I know when I'm like that, like, I do have nightmares. I do have so, like, it's just like a dark cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the negative energy creates negative energy. And however you perceive that is what was going on. Like, the footsteps and stuff. I was so scared that you're going to say that was Bobby.
Yeah, me too.
Coming up those stairs.
Me too. Well, and it's so, when it's just adults involved, it's easier to say, like, you know what, an adult's going to make their decision, you know, to kind of cut your ties and to, while you're still worried about them, to move on, even though you want to give them the help that they deserve. But when a kid's involved, it's just a whole different. It's just different.
But I am glad to hear that Jess is like thriving.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next one. Good morning, ladies. First, I'm currently listening to Sinister Sightings episode 307, and I am dying about Donna and the elbow rug burns. Girl, totally feel that one. On to my story. About 3 years ago, I connected with an ex who was my first love, and the breakup was only because we were both very young. I was 19 and he was 23. Anyway, I'm sitting on his couch one night and I watched the bathroom light turn on, so I asked him if he has a timer on the light, to which he replies, "Nope, that's just my ghost." Well, alrighty then. Fast forward a few weeks ago when he found an EMF detector at a bin store. After a night of drinking and just bullshitting and watching TV at his house, we decided to test the damn thing and see what happened. Turned it on in the living room and nothing. We walked into the hallway outside the bathroom and the damn thing went nuts. Stepped back into the living room, nothing. Then we decided to test the kitchen, since that's another place he notices strange happenings. Again, it went absolutely nuts. After about 30 minutes of playing around with it, we put it away and went back to watching TV. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I caught a shadow going across the kitchen doorway and said something to him. He goes, "Well, I guess that damn thing stirred something up." Anyway, that's all I have for now. Love you ladies tons. Tanya D.
Tanya, do you live across the pond? Because you said bin, like a bin store. Never heard that.
Yeah, y'all stirred that shit up. You can't be playing with shit like that.
Right.
That's like doing a Ouija board. You're stirring that shit up. That's like taking a pot, putting stuff in it, and stirring it. That's what you did. And then y'all quit talking, and that motherfucker said, "I ain't done." And then y'all just went back to watching The Price is Fucking Right, and it wanted to keep talking.
The price is wrong. Also, how's he going to be like, "Oh, just my ghost." Like, "Oh, just my ghost. Excuse me, what?" Like, record scratch moment. What? Okay, the next one. Hey, Donna and Carrie and everyone else listening, George B. from Hattiesburg again with a true crime story this time, one that was just a tad too close to home for us. This past Sunday morning, September 7th, my two boyfriends, Steve and Ian, and I decided to forego our usual Sunday breakfast at Panera Bread in favor of the much closer to home McDonald's. The one on Highway 49, just south of the I-59 interchange. We figured it would be a normal little breakfast with no drama, foreshadowing the foreskin here. And afterwards, we'd go hang out around the lake at the convention center. Once breakfast was over, we headed out to my van. As we got in, we noticed this blue car come racing up the road in front of our parking spot, and watched it as it pulled directly behind this SUV that was backing up. The girl in the SUV slammed on her brakes while the guy in the car hopped out and started yelling at her through a closed window. She backed up again, nearly hitting his car, then attempted to pull forward into the grass and turn to her right. He was steadily yelling through her closed window the entire time while she maneuvered back and forth to get out of the spot. Fortunately, no one was parked next to her, so she had room. While this drama is unfolding before our eyes, Steve is steadily yelling at me to get us out of here. Meanwhile, I was on day 5 of being sick, which was steadily getting worse rather than better, and I was enthralled by what was happening and paid Steve no heed. Finally, the girl got her SUV out of the spot, but then she stopped on the other side of his car and rolled down her passenger window. We were like, "What the fuck?" While he approached the open window, Steve's voice was again in my ear telling me to get us out of there. Next thing you know, we heard two little pops and the guy ducked down. We realized that she had shot at him, most likely warning shots in the air through the open window. At this point, she took off. The guy stood up, looked over at us, and then went around the car to his driver's door. At that point, I was in full agreement with Steve that we should get out of here. So I put the van in reverse, backed out of the spot, and we went around the guy who was now back in his car, and we left. We shared the road with that girl for a short time until we did a U-turn to head back to the convention center. After that drama unfolded, Steve and Ian aren't sure that we will ever go back to that McDonald's for breakfast again. And because I know Donna is dying to know, Ian had a bacon, egg, and cheese bagel with hash brown and pumpkin spiced iced coffee. Steve and I shared the dual sausage burritos and each had hash browns. Steve with the medium coffee and me with the Diet Coke.
Y'all only had one burrito each?
Like, what?
Why y'all so skinny?
Right? Like, it's two burritos for a reason. Because they're little. Also, do you put the hot sauce on there?
You know, when I was in Massachusetts, they did not have hot sauce. They only had mild.
What?
I know, because I used to use hot, and then I got so used to the mild when I was there that I just use mild now. You're lucky you didn't catch a stray bullet.
Also, I want to know what had happened.
Also, what kind of van do you have? I did not picture you driving a van, George.
It's room for activities with his two boyfriends.
Is it like a Sprinter van? Is it like a cargo van? Is it like
What the fuck is a Sprinter van?
Dottie, you have watched enough Real Housewives in your life to know what a fucking Sprinter van is.
Oh, the one that's like...
Yes.
Okay.
Is it like a minivan? Is it like a passenger van? What kind of van do you drive? Tell me.
Also, thank you for telling us exactly the locations of the McDonald's and everything, because you know that we would bug you and be like, wait, tell us everything.
I can't get over that y'all shared that fucking burrito combo. Y'all let us know. Do y'all share a burrito combo or do y'all just eat it on your own?
Eat it on our own.
Yeah.
I would share the burrito combo if
but
I
got something else. So, yes.
I would have got the bagel thing with Ian. Like, that would have been me. And then I'd been like, you want to share the burrito combo?
Yeah, I would have gotten a bagel and a burrito. Or I would have gotten like, okay, this is actually my go-to. I will get a sausage with cheese biscuit and a burrito.
Let me tell y'all something. So the other day, me and Tiffany were at McDonald's getting breakfast.
We're so bad.
And I mean, well, let me just say Chris was there too, but this was more about Tiffany. She wanted a sausage and cheese biscuit. And so I say that to the lady and I'm going on like, because we had a lot of things because it's like, you want to share this, you want to do this, you want to, you know, whatever. And Tiffany said, why is that biscuit like $4? Like, it should not be that, because that lady had put in a sausage, egg, and cheese minus the egg.
Uh-huh.
And Tiffany was like, that's not how it usually is. And so I told her, I was like, can it be the other way? Can it be a sausage biscuit, add cheese?
Yes.
And that was like $2 cheaper.
Yes.
So just be on the lookout.
Oh, actually, if they ring it up as a sausage and cheese biscuit, it's more expensive than if they ring it up as a sausage biscuit, add cheese too.
Damn, we are just doing the Lord's work out here helping y'all.
We really are. But anywho's, it's going on to the next one. Hey, ladies, it's Maggie from PA again, keeping the stories coming till I can't find a tale I haven't told. It's September right now, and my classes at nursing school started back up. I'm planning on writing a few and sending it every week or two to keep them coming. Anywho, as I said in my last write-in, my dad and my sister had a few near-death experiences. I'll start with my dad's. It's 1962, and my dad is 4, living in a rural part of Pennsylvania, at the first house he grew up in. A cute cottage with 2 rooms, one for my grandparents and the other for my dad and his sister, who were 4 and 7 at the time. A couple of neighbors, all with big gardens to keep all the families fed. My dad is playing in the yard with a couple of neighborhood boys, and my grandmother is in the garden with my aunt, tending to whatever they were growing. She always told him to stay out of the road because, well, he's 4 and isn't going to look before crossing. The boys are playing in the yard, and the one tells my dad, "Hey, come over, I got a treehouse now." Of course, a 4-year-old wants to see a treehouse, so the boys cross the street, and my dad goes to my grandma to check if it's okay. She says yes and leaves the garden to make sure he gets there safely. My dad runs from the backyard to the front yard and straight across the road without looking. He says he heard someone yell, "Stop, slow down," and that was all he remembered in that moment. My dad was hit by a car that rounded the corner and didn't slow down. My grandma gets to my dad and throws him in the car with my aunt and gets him to the hospital. He's in bad shape and he's unconscious for 3 days. What my dad does remember, he swears, felt like just an hour. He remembers waking up in a field and it was hazy. But further ahead was this perfect brightness in the field with flowers. And the clouds were low, like they were the trees and the sky and all at the same time, with glowing bubble-like orbs floating around. He starts running and playing with the orbs, trying to catch them, and he hears, "Matt, Matthew, is that you?" He turns around and sees his Aunt Margaret. He gets excited and runs straight to her. They hug, and he says he missed her so much. Aunt Margaret says, "I miss you too, but you shouldn't be here now." My dad is confused and said, "No, it's great here. I'm supposed to be here. Look, the clouds are like bubbles." Margaret says, "You shouldn't play with them. Those are like me. We're supposed to be here, enjoying the light." My dad keeps pleading with her, "I want to stay here. It's warm, and I don't want to leave you." She tells him she knows, but they will see each other again. They start walking back to where he woke up, further away in the field, where it gets hazy. He keeps walking and can feel her take her hand off his shoulder, and slowly he turns around and she's gone. He's tired and sits down and then lays down and feels this heavy weight on him like a blanket and closes his eyes. The next thing he knows, he wakes up in a hospital with his mom crying next to him. My dad just reaches out and says, "Mom, why are you sad?" She picks her head up fast and hugs him tight. After the doctors check him out, says he's okay and it's a miracle, my grandmother explains what happened to him. He tells her he is confused because he thought he just visited Aunt Margaret again. That was a shock since she passed away 2 months prior unexpectedly in her sleep at 46 years old. My dad, to this day, knows he saw her and says as long as he goes back there and there are still flying orbs, he's going to catch one and figure out what it is. Now to my sister. For further reference, our grandmother was called Big Mom. Tara was maybe 4 or 5. Why they were the same age beats the hell out of me, and it's weird. But she was running around our backyard, playing, throwing ball into the air, and forcing us to catch it. She was throwing it up in the air, and it was just above her, so she ran to catch it. Except when she ran after it, she tripped and fell headfirst right into the concrete bird bath. I was maybe 3 at the time, and my mom was on the patio watching us. As soon as she heard the thunk and watched me walk over to Tara and she wasn't crying, she came flying over. Tara's head was bleeding, and thank God we lived 4 minutes from the hospital. She tried waking her up and she wasn't responding. Somehow she scooped both of us up and got us in the car and flew to the hospital. Tara was only unconscious for about 3 hours, but needed monitoring, and at the hospital, they had to get an IV right away to give her blood and medications to get her heart beating more. My mom swore it was like her heart had stopped, both my sister's and my mom's. My dad got to the hospital shortly after they started treating Tara. He took me outside and was chain smoking and stressed out. When Tara woke up, she was looking around and trying to figure out where she was and looking around the room. The doctors checked her out and wanted to keep her overnight, so they were going to transfer her upstairs. But all the while we waited, my mom kept seeing Tara looking, and she kept getting the doctors to check on her, but she was fine, just looking. My mom couldn't figure out for what. She kept asking, "Tara, what do you need? What are you looking for?" Once Tara had some energy, she stirred again, and she asked, "Where is Big Mom?" And my mom said, "Big Mom?" Tara looked again and said, "Where is Big Mom?" Dad walked in from the smoke break, knowing she is going to be okay and needed to calm down. Mom turned to him and said, "Tara wants to know where Big Mom is." My dad just stared at her, and Tara looks at her dad and says, "Is she outside?" My dad sits next to her and just holds her close. My dad asked her, "Where did you see Big Mom?" Tara says, "She was here the whole time. She was in the car with her. Held her hand when they put that thing in," pointing to the IV. "Big Mom was right there," pointing to the empty chair in the room. They were both shocked because we never got to meet our grandmother. She had passed away less than 2 months before my sister was born. Big Mom passed away September 9th, 1997, and Tara was born November 13th. My mom goes to my dad's jacket to get his wallet, rummages through and pulls out a picture of my Big Mom and granddad, takes it to Tara and says, "Do you mean a nurse or the woman in the photo?" Tara just stares at my mom and says, "I know what Big Mom looked like, and she was here," and points at Big Mom in the photo. Neither my mom nor my dad know how to explain it. Tara wasn't conscious and not responding to anyone, but knew who everyone was and who took care of her, and was certain for a fact that our grandmother was there. I'm grateful for both of these women who came to protect my family when they needed it. I'll write in soon about my creepy old apartment and a friend's experience hiking the Appalachian Trail. I think this should go out September 10th with more to follow. Maggie from PA. Maggie, okay, so what your dad saw in the clouds, the little bubbles that he was holding, reminds me of like the little memories that they hold in Inside Out. Also, if your sister's name is pronounced Tara and not Tara, I'm sorry.
What in the world with your family having two near-death experiences?
At the same damn age, too.
That is freaky. And I feel like one in a million kind of chances.
Right. Your dad's hit by a damn car, and then your sister bangs her head on a birdbath as she falls. Like, those are just bizarre. But I think that they definitely did see the people that they felt like they saw.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, last one. The creepy guy. Hi, ladies. I heard the call for more stories, so here we go. This story isn't the most horrible thing that's ever happened, but I think of it often when I'm walking around in the world as a woman because, ugh, men. When I was in college, I worked at a restaurant known for wings, beer, and sports. If you know, you know. And I loved it. I loved working in the bar side of things because it was way easier at the end of the night, because the bartender did most of the cleaning up and was willing for you to get cut earlier than if you were on the dining side. Now, I was a broke college student. I had a car at one point, but it was a piece of shit and stopped working on me one day. I had no other option than to walk. Actually, I did have other options, but I didn't want to be a burden on my friends. So I started to walk the nearly 5 miles both ways to get to and from work. It wasn't so bad going in, but when I was the closer or I was one of the last ones to leave, it was dark and cold. One night, I was walking with one of my headphones in. I went by a gas station. There was a group of men standing out in front of it, and I noticed them as soon as they came into view. I was just chanting in my head, "Don't notice me, don't notice me, don't notice me." I was nearly past them when one man yelled, "Hey!" at me. I tried to ignore him because the earphone was in my ear and that was the one facing them. I kept walking, but then I heard him jogging up to me. He touched my shoulder and I turned to look at him. He gave me a, quote, charming smile and asked if he could walk me home. And I said, "Oh no, I'm just here." Thankfully, we were close to a lot of homes, so I just vaguely gestured towards them. "Oh no," he said. "A young lady like you should not be walking alone." I was mentally preparing to walk to the closest house with the garage light on which was thankfully on the corner and had proud home of an honor roll student at insert high school name here, and explain what was going on. I refused again, as politely as my Midwestern ass could, but he frowned. He then asked if he could get my number, at least, so he could make sure I got home. I saw this as a way out, and I gave him the number that was close to my own number, but not quite. He then tried to call me before I could walk away. When my phone didn't ring, he frowned at me and repeated the number. "Are you sure that's right?" His tone had totally changed, and I got really nervous, and I said, "Oh, it's 50, not 05. Sorry." His smile came back when he called again, and my phone lit up. I saved him under the name he told me, and I got out of there as soon as I could. Once I got home, one of my friends came over and asked me why my phone was blowing up, and I told her the whole story. Thankfully, she was a lot stronger than me and told him to leave me alone. She also blocked his number and told me that she would either drive me to work or let me borrow her car from now on. Again, this isn't the craziest thing that's happened to a woman, but nearly 15 years later, I still think about it, and I worry about my two daughters walking home from school. They're 9 and 7, and we live not even 3 blocks from the school. My partner is at least home to make sure they get home, but it still makes me nervous because they're so sweet and kind, and I don't want to take those things away from them, but I also want them to be guarded. Being a parent is hard, y'all. On to the obligatory love. You ladies are so kind and empathetic in your stories, both on the usual episodes and Sinister Sightings. It's nice to know that there are people out there that still see people in these stories. Thank you so much, and much love to you and your partners and pups, Chris.
It's not all men, but it's usually a man.
Right. Yeah.
Like, just fucking take no for an answer. Like, that's what I don't understand. Why would you want someone that doesn't want you? Like, they clearly don't want you. Like, you clearly don't want them. Like, why would you want someone that does not want you? I don't get it.
I think it's just that they want what they can't have. They want what they see. Look at that puppy in the window. I want it. And even though they probably wouldn't even take care of the puppy when they got home, they want it. They got it. Ariana Grande style.
Man, fucking, sometimes people are the worst.
But I know you're like, that's not even like horrible, but it is. That's so scary.
Because if they're like, here's the thing. People escalate. We know that from domestic violence, from all kinds of things. So if it's starting here, to what point?
Also, how he, like, you know he's done this before because how he called you before you walked off. Like, he's done it where he believed the woman because he was like, who wouldn't want to give me her number? Ha ha ha. Because he was so charming.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't the right number. And so now he knows, like, oh, before you do that,
before you leave, let me call you and make sure it's correct.
And I'm so thankful that you had given a number close to yours so you could be like, oh, sorry, it's actually this. Because I would have been like 555555555, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like something completely opposite, and then that would have been dangerous.
Which is so fucking stupid, because no should be plenty. Wow. Well, thank y'all so much for sending in these stories. Y'all never disappoint. Keep them coming. If you want your story read on an episode, send it in to us at aparanormalchicks@gmail.com. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.